Welcome, everyone, to another show. I am your host, Bill Carson, my co-host, Dave Champion, and together we are totally unprepared. Now, Dave, we have a couple topics we want to get to today. Mm-hmm. However, I noticed something at lunch. Yes. You've got, obviously, a lot of tattoos, but you've always left one leg as a blank canvas. I noticed you've got some new ink on
there. I do. And, you know, fortunately, I will never, ever again have to hear, hey, why doesn't that leg have any ink? Because just the other day, you want to go ahead and put that picture up for us?
All right. Oh, there you go.
There it is, yes. And that is now on my, whether it be my left outer calf. And,
Pirate girl.
I got to tell you, I never had anybody in prom do a tattoo on me because I'm not criticizing anybody, but I'm just saying, art is like taste buds, right? You like what you like and you don't like what you don't. I never found anything from any artist that has ever worked in prom in all the years I've been out here. And then I ran across a guy, Sparky, and
That's amazing. I mean, I've obviously looked at your leg. This is amazing work. I don't have any tattoos, but I can really appreciate it. I got to tell you, I think that's the best one you've got.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's amazing because I saw his work on other people. I'm like, hey, who did that? And then I saw somebody else, who did that work? I was really impressed with the work. And they're like, there's this guy named Sparky. I'm like, how is it all the years I've been out here? I don't know this guy, right? So I tracked him down and we chatted and I told him what I wanted and that's what he came up with, and I'm pleased as punch.
If I ever got any kind of tattoo, that would be one of the things I'd be concerned about, would be the quality standard, because a lot of people have some junky-looking tats.
Yeah.
And it seems like if you get something like this, you're really going to pay for it. But, I mean, that is worth it. That's really good.
And Sparky is very reasonably priced. You know, and most of my stuff is all Liberty-based. Mm-hmm. And but on my legs, I broke out a little bit more some things that were, like, endemic to the tattoo world. And this is an example of that. It's a pinup, which, as you know, are very popular in the tattoo mm-hmm. world. So I did not have a pinup, and so
A pinup pirate girl.
And, you know, I gave him three requirements. One was it had to be a pirate theme. Number two was that it had to be muted colors, because my other leg is predominantly dark and I didn't want to have, like, fluorescent yellow next to that leg. And the last one was because it was going to be on my leg where kids could see it. I didn't want any body parts exposed. I wanted everything covered.
You know, because
some pinups are not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want smutty stuff on me anyway. But those were the requirements. Other than that, I left it to him.
Does he have his own studio in town, or does he work at another
studio? He does. It's actually called Three Dots and Teardrops.
Three Dots and Teardrops.
Right.
It's unique.
I've been out here for almost
really
7 years. I'd never heard of it. Right.
Okay.
He's right across from CVS on Frontage Road, across the one on 160 there.
I've seen a billboard that says tattoos there, but that's his place, huh?
Yeah. You could throw a baseball from Pahrump Rentals and hit his front door.
Pahrump Rentals actually has their, like, nuts and bolts department in that same building.
They do. Absolutely correct. Yeah.
Good.
All right. Thank you for that, Noah. So what else are we going to talk about?
You know, I think we were going to talk a little bit about the letdown of some elected officials. You were talking about every headline that's been coming out recently.
I'm sure you guys can relate to this. Every day, now I don't consume my news through, like, the national evening news, because to me that's like, if you want to get lied to, that's where you get your news from. So I ferret out my news, but you know, you have to start at whatever the front page is on whatever source you go to,
and then filter through all the BS.
Correct. And every day, I'm sure you've noticed it, every day it's like Marco Rubio, Hillary Clinton, Rand Paul, and every day it's some seemingly apparent dramatic story about all the things that are going on. And as you mentioned, lunch, it's more than 18 months till the election. Every day one of these sphincters is on. I say sphincters because nothing's going to change. Look, we went from George Bush to Barack Obama, and probably 99% of the policies that were in place under George Bush and the actions of the federal government continued. And whoever gets elected in behind Obama, 99% of the policies and the conduct of the United States government is going to go. So it's like, why are we doing this every day?
It's actually kind of interesting because the Patriot Act is coming up for a revote in June. That's when it's set to expire.
Okay.
So I'm very interested to see how it's going to go. I mean, I'm I chair the Republican Party in Nye County, Nevada. Mm-hmm. I also sit on the executive committee for the state Republican Party. So I have a vested interest in conservative principles. And I'm very honest about this, and it's no secret to anybody who's in either party at the county or state level, that I choose the Republican Party because the parties that are a little bit more conservative, where I would more really belong, okay, don't have a voice. They're third parties.
Understood.
You know, like whether it's IAP or Constitution Party or Libertarian, or there's a number of them that are more conservative than the Republican Party. And it's those parties really exist because the Republican Party left them, the people in them, not that they left the Republican Party. So that's really where I'm doing my best with a lot of good, solid people locally and also at the state level to drag the Republican Party back where it belongs.
At least
to
in Nevada.
Mix. Yes, at least in Nevada. And there's a couple of other states that are doing well, too. Maine, Arizona, Texas, all doing pretty well as well.
I heard some interesting things that are going on up in Reno now, or Carson City now.
Oh, in our
tell
state
the audience
capital.
Some of the stuff.
Oh. All right, so
something about a budget.
For the first time since 1929, 86 years, we have the governor, who's a Republican, and both houses of the state legislature, the Senate and the Assembly, controlled by Republicans.
Great, so we must be getting a whole bunch of, like, really conservative
left. Not even close. The governor, our Republican governor, introduced a $1.3 billion tax hike. This is a biennium because our legislature meets for 120 days every other year, every odd numbered year.
So whatever and gets done. We're living with it for a while.
And the thing is they only get paid for 60 days.
Nope.
So they extended it years ago, but they never extended their pay. So they're making like $9,000 for 4 months worth of work, which I think is great. You know, it's different than, say, California, full-time legislature that meets more days than I think the Congress does back in D.C. Anyhow,
well, that would explain why California's a mess.
Oh yeah, we're legislatures. We're here to legislate. You know, that's our job. We're writing past more new ridiculous laws. So cradle to grave in California, not so much here. You have to concentrate on more important things, you would think. The governor has introduced a $1.3 billion tax hike, and here's a huge issue that
we've got. This is a Republican governor.
Republican governor, yeah. Yeah, Republican by registration.
So I guess if it was a Democrat, it would have been $1.35 billion?
No, it would have probably been the same $1.3 billion.
Okay.
But the thing is the Republicans in the Senate and the Assembly would have balked at it, rather than most of them, in fact, accepting it.
Okay, so let me see if I understand you. They would have disapproved of it and potentially voted against it simply because it was proffered by somebody in the opposing party.
Correct.
Okay.
But because they're in the same party, maybe we should consider it, regardless of all of that. I think that's
everything that's wrong with politics, by the
way,
right?
Yes, I would agree. Yeah. So keep in mind that a lot of this money is going towards education, which is broken in this state. So the idea is let's throw more money into it. And the biggest unions in the entire state are the teachers' unions and the administrators that are in there getting paid a lot of money. Our former attorney general in the state was given a $250,000 a year cush job that was created for the Clark County School District when she lost her reelection bid last November, or lost a bid to, I think, move into another part. She was termed out. She was trying to move into another state elected official position and lost. So the Clark County School District gave her a $250,000 a year job plus benefits. Anyhow, what it comes down to is the people of the state rejected. There is no corporate income tax here, and there's no personal income tax here in Nevada. There was a ballot measure that would have had a gross receipts tax on businesses in Nevada. So
businesses,
that was,
by the way, is defined as corporations.
Yeah. So we have 79% of the population of Nevada said, absolutely no way.
So that's essentially 8 out of every 10 voters.
Yes.
Okay.
And what the governor did in his State of the Union, State of the State speech, was he proposed a different version of that, 2.0. Instead of a gross margins tax that went to the state taxation department, it was going to be a graduated business license fee. So every year at the beginning of the year when you want to renew your license, you have to provide what your gross sales were, and then that dictates how much your business license is going to be, so the same amount of money.
That's why the Nevada Secretary of State now, when you apply for a corporate entity, asks you to anticipate your revenues.
Yes, yes,
oh,
they do.
Oh, the evil bastards.
So it's the same amount of money is going to go to the government just through a different funnel. And the 79% of the people said, no, governor puts it in there. So
if I understand this, though, tax the business receipts of the corporation. And that's bad, the voters say.
Yeah.
So now we're going to use a graduated rate on their income to tax them as their privilege tax for existence. And where we're going to generate the exact same amount of money that we would have generated from the other tax, we're going to call it something else. And, of course, the corporations are going to pass that on to the citizens. So the governor is still bending the people over, even though 8 out of 10 said we don't want this.
Based on his proposed budget, yes. Now, he also challenged anybody to give a better solution. The state controller, guy by the name Ron Connect. He is recently elected. We actually have every state office, every state constitutional officer is an elected Republican as well. First time we've had everybody and both parties. And he sat down with a bunch of professionals and other legislators and came up with a new budget, which actually doesn't raise a single dime of taxes, allows some older taxes to sunset that were supposed to sunset way back in 2009, funds virtually everything that the governor wanted to do by shifting some things around, prioritizing things, and using some business solutions to cutting some overhead, and said, here's a new proposal.
The increase in tax in the new proposal was how much?
The same thing.
No. The increase in tax was how much?
$1.3 billion.
No, on the second one, the one that the controller
proposed. Oh, none. Nothing.
Okay, I just want to make clear so they understand.
No increase at all.
Zero tax increase, accomplishing all the primary goals.
Right. So earlier this week, this went to the state Senate. The state Senate, which has 11 Republicans and 10 Democrats, passed 17-4. They passed the governor's $1.3 billion tax increase. But here's the thing.
Your money.
There are two state senators that represent Nye County in different areas. Mm-hmm. Both of them voted against it. So of the four that voted against it, Pete Goicoechea and Don Gustafson, both of you voted against it. Thank you.
Good on you.
So now it goes to the assembly, and we need to have 15 assembly people stand against that. And we have, I think it's 25 Republicans in the state assembly. Let's see how many fold.
You know, as disturbing as it is for that to come out, thank you for letting everybody know. And we'll be back right after these words. And we are back, and it's time for... What is up with the amount of time and energy that a certain segment of the population is willing to invest in trying to tell other people how to live, including by enforcing the way they see life should be, into the law to constrain how other people will live? Now, I am a very libertarian-minded person, and that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But my view is, my view of libertarianism, not capital L, the Libertarian Party, but the principles of libertarianism is essentially live and let live. My personal definition of freedom is, or liberty, is freedom. Liberty is freedom constrained only by our responsibility to respect the equal rights of others. That's it. Now, perhaps I'm naive, perhaps I am romantic in the sense of classical romanticism, in the sense that I do believe that I was raised to believe America is a land of liberty. And as I'm getting older, I'm believing that that's operative less and less and less. Now, I don't know whether it's that our country's being less liberty-oriented or that I'm waking up to the fact as I get older over the last 20 years that it's not really functioning the way it should. But one of the most egregious ways, in my view, that we destroy our own liberty is by this thing where people want to tell other people how to live. Now, this goes on in a million ways, large and small, but of course it's taken on a whole new perspective, a life of its own, if you will, over the same-sex marriage issue. And the reason I decided to talk about it today is I was reading on this Supreme Court blog about the amicus briefs filed in the case, the same-sex marriage case that the United States Supreme Court is reviewing Oglefell, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, versus Hodges. And that's the case. That's how the Supreme Court has styled the case that it's ruling on. Its decision expected in June. Now, that case has set a record by far on the amount of amicus briefs filed in the case. Now, an amicus brief means a friend of the court brief. I guess a layperson's easy way to understand that is there's a group of people that have some dog in this fight, if you will. They're not a party to the action, but they represent a group that has a dog in this fight, so to speak. And so they submit documents to the court, which basically says, when you're deciding this, we would like you to decide it this way and for these reasons. The idea is that each brief brings something new and different. In other words, if you know somebody's already briefed an issue, you are not to bring that same issue to the court in your own amicus brief. So each one is, at least in theory, distinct. This probably not wholly accurate, but you get the drift. So here's what the Supreme Court has now as far as amicus briefs. 76 amicus briefs in favor of same-sex marriage. 66 briefs against same-sex marriage, and 5 that rather illogically claim to represent neither position, but we just want the court to consider this particular issue. And of course, it's ridiculous because when you read their issue, it does fall on one side or the other. But the way legal experts look at that is if they declare at the outset, we are not advocating the court take any particular position on this, then the legal experts attribute it to sort of this non-bias category, which is disingenuous. So we've got all these amicus briefs, and you read the list of law professors and attorneys and people who have participated in this, and then drafting all of these amicus briefs, and then you look at the groups they represent, and I couldn't help but be struck by the fact that, I mean, we're talking, I'm going to guess everybody's involvement in this, hundreds of thousands. I'm not talking about just the guys writing the briefs. I'm talking about the whole totality of what's involved in getting those briefs to the court. We've got to be talking hundreds of thousands of hours, which, in my estimation, is being taken away from productive ventures, because one of the things that struck me when I read through, I didn't read through all the briefs, I read through a summation prepared by a attorney who practices at the Supreme Court level, judging each one, and not judging it and correcting it, representing what it characterizes. And when I read the pro same-sex marriage briefs, they seemed to me to be logical, and they flowed in a way that made sense to my brain, at least. And then I got to the ones that were opposing same-sex marriage. And as I was reading them, and of course I try and read these things very open, even though I have a position, obviously, I try and read these amicus briefs, the summaries, with an open mind, because maybe something is going to hit me that I hadn't considered before, and if I'm closed off to that, I don't get it. So I try and read with a very open mind, and as I was reading the ones against same-sex marriage, I'm reading them and I'm thinking, if I sort of put them all together and attribute a theme to them, the theme would be, hey, you guys on the Supreme Court, let me explain to you why it's cool and desirable that we continue to discriminate. It's the weirdest thing ever. And all of this time and energy invested to tell other people, you can't live like this, or we don't approve of you living like this, or you can live like that, but you can't live like that at the same level. You have to be less than us. You can't be this. The time and energy wasted baffles me. Bill, what do you think?
You know, I was at a local pub, and a gluten-free, atheist, vegan who was pro-marijuana walked into the bar.
And heterosexual within, or homosexual?
That we didn't get to, okay. But within 2 minutes, we all knew.
Yeah.
It's you know, hey, I've got my issue, and everybody should be on board with me, and whether you want to hear it or not, I'm going to get up on my soapbox, and I'm going to go about it. And I got to tell you, I just turn the volume down, just tune it out. I am sick and tired of everybody having their issue one side or another, and everybody needs to, oh, if you're not involved, if you don't know, you need to get the facts, or this, that, and the other is going to change, and life is going to be altered forever. Horse hockey.
Right.
Horse hockey.
Now,
back off. Just back off.
I can validate that. One simple thing. Don't ask, don't tell. Remember when all the hoopla was about removing that? And on the Dave Champion show, I said, here's what's going to happen. Because you remember all the crazy claims. Our military was going to fall apart. All the heterosexuals would leave the military once a gay person could actually say, oh, hey, dude, by the way, I'm gay. Once that was possible, all the heterosexuals would flock out of the military and America would be, prostrate, not able to defend herself. And yeah, right. And I told the audience as we went through this process leading up to the moment when it went away, I said, this is all poppycock. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to like mark the year anniversary, the 2 year anniversary, the 3 anniversary, 3 year anniversary. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to tell you, see, nothing. All of that crap you ran out was exactly that.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you.
So I can validate that.
The military moves very slow, and you're in 6-year contracts. So I really doubt there's going to be a change, but you wouldn't be able to see the change until 10 and 20 years start coming around.
Well, remember, you had guys that their enlistment was up the day after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was relieved, the week after, the month after, the
sure.
6 months, you know. So if people were going to be flocking out by where they're at, like, what, 3.5 years now? If people were
probably even more than that.
Were flowing out of the military because of this, we'd already know. We'd already see the trend beginning. And as a matter of fact, it's been zero. There's been almost no people who have left the military because that guy over there was able to say, yo, dude, I'm gay.
And, you know, it's like in society. You can't check out of society because there's people in society that are gay. You know, it's ridiculous.
Right.
But just for people to be pushing whatever it is, I got to tell you, one thing I don't care for, like on my front door, mm-hmm. it says no soliciting. So, ding dong, I open the door, and there are 3 women right there, and they're handing me something from Jehovah's Witness. Hey, practice as you like, it's not for me. And the lady starts going in her spiel, and I stopped her and I said, can I ask you something? I said, what does the sign say? You rang my doorbell, what does the sign directly underneath it say? She says, well, it says no soliciting, but we're not here selling anything. And then she goes,
really?
She starts to defend her position. I said, hold on. So what the sign should read is, if I'm not expecting you or you're not delivering something that I ordered, don't bother me. The thing is that's a whole lot of words on a plaque that they don't sell.
Right.
So in lieu of that, I put up no soliciting. So I've got to say, I appreciate that you're out there, you're doing your thing, you're trying to support your religion. What I don't appreciate is I'm making it pretty obvious I don't want you selling it on my doorstep.
Right.
What I also don't appreciate is that you're defending the words there when we already know the intent is,
I don't want
you on my doorstep.
But you know, but you've got to give them a little bit of credit, and here's why. Because your eternal salvation, Bill, is far more important than your desire to not have strangers ring your doorbell.
I got to tell you, I don't bequeath these guys any sort of undoing for going around. It's not for me.
I
realize this is part of what your religion says, and you're supposed to go knocking on doors and getting the idea going and
spread
try
the
to,
good word
you
of
know,
the gospel.
It's like a friend of mine introduced me to the concept. Christianity began in the first century as a relationship with Jesus Christ. From there, it went to Greece, where it became a philosophy. From there, it went to Rome, where it became an institution. From there, it came to America, where it became a business, and that's when it came to me. So why do these religions and these churches want to continue to grow and grow and grow?
Mm-hmm.
It all means more money, 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 more political influence here and there, and 76 amicus briefs or 66 amicus briefs against. This is what it's all about. And, you know, Gandhi said it, I like your Christ, I just don't care much for your Christians, because of how bastardized it has become.
One might even say hypocritical.
Hypocritical that it's become, sure. So when it comes to anybody pushing any sort of agenda, and it's always a social agenda, I don't care about your social agendas. I really don't care about your social agendas.
Because even the religious pitch comes back down to eventually the social construct.
Yeah, and, you know, look at the biggest just buffoon of a
of a social aspect that got way too far, way too long, way too fast in America's history was that of Prohibition. Finally got fixed. That was all social aspects.
And you know who drove that? Religious folks.
Yeah, the church. Yeah. The church did.
That, they were the single largest influence in America for creating what I think many Americans would consider one of the most boneheaded episodes in our history. So when you talk about the social construct, I mean, there's a perfect example that, here's something that, you know, the faith, which is supposed to be over here a personal thing, turned into a national debacle.
It did. And just for that sort of thing, I don't care what your issue is, just leave me out of it. We'll be right back. All right, let's spin it off and see what's on my mind today. You know what really grinds my gears? We've talked about this to a point before, but I'm going to get into some specifics on it. And that is people who just don't care. People who just are so wrapped up in their own little world, they don't consider anybody else in what they're doing, especially in public. That's my problem. I walked into a local restaurant, place I hit every now and again, just this past week. And as I walked in, they have a sofa where people can sit if they're waiting on their food to go or whatever it might be. It's right outside of the bathrooms. Large, very usable bathrooms. And as I walk in and I round the corner to where I want to order my food, there's a woman with her baby on the couch changing the baby's dirty diaper right there in the restaurant where everybody eats. Rather than going into the bathroom to take care of it, where there's facilities to do that. I thought that to be a bit odd. Then, when she's done changing the baby's diaper, she goes over to the table she was at with her mother, the baby's grandmother, I would assume. I'm assuming the relationship there. They look similar, so it looked like grandma, mom, baby. They grabbed up their stuff, grabbed up the purses, whatever it was, and exited out. And I had a chance to look at the table that they were sitting at. And it was an absolute disaster. It looked like somebody took all kinds of food, put it together, put a small stick of dynamite in there, and let it off and went everywhere. Small restaurant operated by a husband and wife. You've got this horrible diaper incident I just described. I mean, out where people are eating. Then you've got the baby who's being fed like a Chex Mix type of a thing, not just all over the table, not just in the chair, the high chair where the baby was sitting, all over the floor, and now going in underneath the tables next to where they were actually eating. Plus the food that the adults were eating just scattered everywhere. Lettuce, bread, meat, just everywhere, even on the two chairs that were unoccupied. And I've got to tell you, it's not the first time I've seen that sort of thing. It's not. Probably won't be the last. But could you imagine if someone came to your house and did that sort of thing and left it that way? You're going into these people's restaurants, and you treat them with such amazing disrespect. It boggles the mind. If I had ever done anything even remotely close to that when I was a kid, I would have got the backhanded justice from one of my parents. And I would have deserved it. And it would have taught me a lesson. Unfortunately, nobody took the backhand of justice towards this woman or her mother, the grandmother, the baby, and they just leave this horrendous mess. I've even seen this like in a grocery store where a kid at whatever age, from infant, toddler, maybe even a little older, grabs something and opens it up, and the crap goes everywhere. Just everything explodes out of the bag. So what do? They just, oh, stop that, throws the bag down, and then jets out of there. Doesn't bother telling anybody. Look, mistakes happen. You drop something, you break it, something pops open, whatever. Take some responsibility, please. Best to try to use that as a teachable moment for your child so that they don't repeat this poor behavior in the future. But if you just throw it down and book out of there and say, you know, forget about these guys, they'll clean it up and I'm not going to say a word. You're teaching your child to do that, and you're going to continue this poor behavior pattern for yet another generation.
and they might influence others to continue doing it. Kind of the reason society isn't as polite as it once was, isn't as clean as it certainly should be. So, Dave, I got to ask you, if it was your restaurant, by the way, I found out that they left just right under a 10% tip. I asked. I was uncouth enough to ask.
Yeah,
and if this is your restaurant and this is the way somebody, some clients came and treated, and keep in mind, I'm asking this, I could not be a server.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing this, I treat my servers well. I usually start in my head mentally at a 20% tip. And based on how the service goes and your attitude, it's going to go up or down from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a stranger to leaving a 30% tip in a decent restaurant when somebody's done a really excellent job. So I realize these people have a job I'm just not wired for. But if somebody were to come into your restaurant or even you were a server and this happened, I mean, am I off base here?
Not from my point of view, because what you're talking about is really a pet peeve of mine, whether it's from the perspective of the restaurant owner or a customer who's oftentimes having to deal with the annoyance of unsupervised children. And I love kids, so I don't mean a kid simply that like might run up the aisle one time. You know, you know what I'm talking about, over the top stuff. But I will tell you kind of a funny little anecdote. Back in the dark days when I was married, my then wife,
back during the Crusades of life.
That's right. Back before I broke free. No, that's not fair to her. Anyway, so she was, when I first met her, she was a server. And as our relationship progressed, she became a supervisor. And then eventually, while we were married, she became a restaurant part of management.
Okay.
But when she was a server supervisor, we really had this conversation one day about how horribly customers treat servers. And we never had that discussion, and I was appalled at what I heard. So then when she got into management, I said, I want to take a couple weeks off from work, and I want to come work for you as a server. Okay? And here was the response.
Why?
Right? And I said, well, here's why. I said, I would like to cure some injustice. Like she would tell me these stories about like these old ladies who would come in and just be mean and miserable. And I said, what I would like to do is, you know, bring out on a tray their glass of Merlot and trip over my shoelace. And she's like, oh, God, no. Right. And I said, and then one of the things she told me was that people would sometimes say, they would say, well, I'll just use an example. I'll have the chicken. And then when the meal would come out, they'd, in a very nasty, I ordered the shrimp. Now, even if you were running a tape recorder so you could say, here's you running chicken, you're not allowed to.
Right.
You're not allowed to correct them even though they're being a complete jerk and they're totally in the wrong and they've got a horrible attitude, right? You just have to suck it up. So I told her, I said, you know, keeping that story in mind, I said, you know, I'd like to have one of these guys, you know, turn to me and say, you know, I ordered the shrimp. No, sir, you ordered the chicken. I ordered the shrimp. Stand up. We're going outside. And I'm, oh. Because they're not.
That's it. In the parking lot.
Right. They're not used to. They're used to people taking that from them. Okay. Because they're in the driver's seat, so to speak. And the management will not permit the servers to actually give that customer what the customer's asking for. Right. Which is a slap, either euphemistically or physically. But going back to your point, I could never run a restaurant because you can't say anything in that business. If they crap the whole place up, you cannot say anything. You take their money, you thank them warmly for coming in. I can't wait to see you again tomorrow, Mrs. Smith. And that's it. And I, like you, not built that way.
You know, I got to tell you, the restaurant industry has the highest rate of failure of all businesses traditionally, percentage-wise. 5% of businesses survive, and about 5% of that 5% of restaurants survive the long term. We're talking 10 years. And I have, a few years ago, in fact, it's been several years, I have conceptualized, I have this whole conceived pizza restaurant that would be a wonderful franchise. And I'm talking
different than anything else that's going on. Big, and the marketability of it is off the chain. All of the ideas that I've had to market this thing to virtually every walk of life, where people are like, man, I am definitely going to try these guys' pizza. And when they do, that pizza is going to rock. I'm talking about the best dough, the best sauce, and I have recipes for all of these things. But what keeps me from pressing the trigger on this one?
I can only imagine.
Having to deal with the general public, who honestly, I'm not wired to be able to take that kind of guff. You know, when I, years ago, I grew up in a print shop and I worked for my father. It's a family business. And he used to tell us, I don't pay you enough to take hard abuse from clients. Mm-hmm. If there's something that we messed up and you can help fix it, great. But if they're just being abusive, especially personally abusive, I don't pay you enough to take that. Yeah. So don't.
Cursing at you. And
yeah. So we were empowered to, at some point in time, there was a break, and nobody ever abused it, but there was a breaking point. It's like, you know what? I'm done with you. I'm not taking your order. I'll have your artwork delivered to you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. And a few times we had to do that. You can't really do that in the restaurant industry.
No, no. With my secretary, when I had the consultancy, I had my secretary tell me, this guy's been verbally abusive to me now twice. I said, get him on the phone with me.
I remember this.
A psychiatrist, of all things. You would think
I
know
walked
better.
Into your office while you were on the phone with this guy.
Yeah. And I told him, if you are unhappy with something and you want to light somebody up, get on the phone and light me up, because I'm the one giving the orders around here. I'm responsible, not them. I said, but you are not permitted to do it to them. And he said, yes, I am. I said, pardon me? He said, I'm the customer. I'm paying the bill. I'll speak that way to whoever I want. I said, you're not a customer anymore. Click. And yep. That was the last time I've ever spoken to him. Now, have you ever seen the expression? I've seen it on some T-shirts and stuff. It says, the amount of sarcasm you get is based on the amount of stupidity you offer.
Yes.
Okay. That's why you... I know this guy really well, okay? That's why you could never be in a business like the restaurant business with the general public, because I've seen you around people who do and say stupid things, especially when they're trying to influence you in this direction or that, and they're just throwing stupidity at you. I've seen how you respond.
Yeah.
Now, personally, I love it when he does that. It's great entertainment.
It's funny, because you could probably be 100 yards away. Yeah. And just watch my mannerisms as well as you know me and know what's going on, oh, having yeah. not heard a word.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like, oh, I need to go walk over there.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things. If everybody just, the golden rule, treat others as you would like to be treated yourself. Put yourself in their shoes. I know I can't be a server. I know it. I'm not built to be a server and put up with the things that Dave was talking about. I can't do it, so I am not going to put anybody through that. Now, if somebody's even a really lousy server, mm-hmm. I'll actually try to take patience. I'll even occasionally say, just so you know, da-da-da-da, this, that, and the other, it would be a help. I appreciate it. Mm. And sometimes servers have bad days. We all do.
Absolutely.
And it's tough to leave that when you're having a bad day, and when a customer puts you in that bad mood, I try to at least get them to laugh or smile, because that really is magic. You know, you wake up in the morning, you're in a crappy mood, somebody makes you laugh or smile, it gets better instantly, at least a little bit.
Yeah, and you're very good about that. I'm very good about that, trying to put the people we're doing business with at ease.
An equal level.
Until the stupid starts.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back.
And we are back. This is the fourth segment, where we talk about things you want to talk about, and we encourage you to email us with your thoughts and subjects you might want Bill and I to kick around. And if you said, oh, there it is. Oh, look, new graphics, beautiful graphics. Thank you, Noah. If there's something that you send us that you want us to talk about, and we like the subject, we'll absolutely talk about it. Now, this is kind of an odd one today. A gentleman sent me a message, and he said, when are you and Bill going to create Bill and Dave's School of Firearms Tactics and General Badassery? So, you know, you and I have flirted with this idea a lot.
I thought it would be Bill and Dave's gold standard of firearms tactics and badassery.
As it should be.
Yeah, General Badassery.
Yeah.
So,
did I tell you about the concept? The new concept for the new class?
No, please, carry on.
We'll get there in a minute. Carry on with your thought. And then I'll...
Oh, yeah, I like the idea. I mean, we've done a few things together in the past when it comes to guns and shooting and general badassery, and we play well off of each other because although we've done a lot of similar things, we've also had some real differences in what we've done, so we're able to bring, I wouldn't be able to teach a class on my own with what you bring in, and I think vice versa, because I've done some things, and you've done some other things, and we mold that together and really put kind of a gold standard to it.
And while our experiences have been similar, each of us have reached out in different directions looking for additional information. You've explored this area, I've explored that area, so we bring that in together nicely. So a concept, I'm thinking of doing this class in August. Okay. By the way, if you're interested in this class, drop me an email at dave@davechampionshow.com. And I'll get you on the list for this.
I just have to say, if this is going to be an outdoor class in August, count
it's
me
not,
out.
It's not, which is exactly why I'm doing it in August.
It is so freaking hot.
Did you see the movie John Wick?
No.
Okay.
You recently told me about it, but I've not seen
Keanu
it
yet. Reeves, all sorts of crazy martial arts and gun work simultaneously. And I'm probably going to humorously call it the John Wick course, because really sort of what the course acknowledges is with the rise of UFC, MMA stuff, and it's become very popular in the movies, and we've got parkour, that thing where they jump all around.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome stuff.
What's happening is in you go on YouTube, you go to the television, you go to watch movies, and virtually everything you see is way over the top. Now, but I don't think people realize how over the top it is. Okay, I think there's a whole segment of the male population that believes that they can do many of the things they see on these
things. Yeah, they can fly through the air doing a kick and not have to bother with gravity. They can just go straight across for 20 feet.
Right, and you know, if you haven't been involved in physical violence professionally, well, we'll phrase it that way, if you're involved in physical violence professionally, you also understand its limits and what you can do and what you can't do. So what I was thinking about in August was putting on an indoor course, a two-day course, where we would sort of take a look at all that at UFC, MMA, movie stuff, because there's some stuff that looks very sexy in there, yes? And then separate all the stuff you cannot do, first of all, the stuff you cannot do ever in real life, okay? Then the stuff you cannot do unless you're going to spend three or four nights a week in the dojo for 20 years, okay? And distill it down to the stuff that you, under the stress of the moment, being an ordinary guy, not being a martial artist training day in and day out, if you can keep your wits about you enough to do these things, maintain these principles, you stand a darn good chance of prevailing and not getting yourself in trouble because you think you can do all these things you can't really do. And it's sort of like you've probably taught a female self-defense course at some point.
Okay.
Yes. And there's very linear moves, very linear thinking, because only certain things work, yes? Well, when men fight, it's the same thing. There's only certain things that work. There's a certain mindset that works. And when you get outside of that envelope, you start, this is where you get your ass kicked, right? Because you think you can do all these things and you can't. You think you're a tough guy and you're not. You know, I've had a pretty robust life in that regard, and I'm super aware of what my limits are, and I would never go outside the envelope that I want to teach the people, because there's these basic fundamental core things that work. So with all that said, that'll be in August, but back to his point, what are you and I going to do?
Well, first of all, I'm thinking of a logo, and no matter what is in the logo, I'm going to be wearing a boonie hat and holding a cigar.
All right, well...
Because that's kind of badass.
That is. That's very Arnold-esque, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. You know, well, not all bad.
Let's see. How do we put, like, crazy shooting and tattoo stuff?
I know that you'll have an AK. We'll probably both have 1911s.
You know what we'd probably have to have if we did this? You'd probably have to have your logo. I'd have to have my logo. And they'd somehow have to be, like, touching.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think we could fit all of what you and I would want into one single logo.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
At least it would have to take up the side of a building if we did.
You know, I got to tell you, it feels good to know, because keep in mind, I have really been absent the industry with a few things that I've shot in and done over the last
probably 6 years. Mm-hmm. I've really remained, I've kind of removed myself from the firearms and training industry. But again, I occasionally go in and I'll dabble and I'll do something. There's actually a private group that has contracted with me to do some training with them, some various weapons training. And I don't even know if I've told you about it. I very quietly, about every other month, go out and I'll spend a day with this group.
You did mention that.
And it did I? Okay. And it's just kind of on the QT, just because there's so many other things I've kind of worked into doing. I really, really enjoy teaching. Enjoy teaching on a limited basis because I used to do it full time.
Right, right.
I mean, I was teaching 4 and 5 days a week most weeks of the year, and it just got to being a bit of a drag. Now, when I was teaching
it's sort of all-consuming when you do it that often.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, lucky for me, I had a 2-year stint where every single week it was something different.
Right.
And it was all very high-end. Like, I didn't teach a basic handgun course a single time in 2 years.
Yeah.
I taught middle-of-the-road and advanced handgun courses constantly. I taught shotgun, rifle, and then the fun stuff. I got into some Class 3 stuff. We were teaching Uzis and M16s, and that was like a regular revolving things, tactics courses, precision rifle stuff, which I love. I got to tell you, getting behind a precision rifle and taking a long-range shot that most people be like, can you even see that target? Well, yeah, and I can. I'm going to see it through my magnifying glass, and I'm going to show you, I'm going to teach you how to shoot it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a whole different element to the firearms defensive game. It's a little bit more offensive, if you will, with your thought process, but it's normally done in a defensive environment. So, those are the sorts of things I just dig doing, mm-hmm. but on a limited basis.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
When I said it's sort of all-consuming, it's all-consuming for guys like you and I, because you and I have something that is both an attribute and a fault, and that is that we can't do anything like 70%.
Yeah, half of it just doesn't work.
It's 100%.
We're all in.
Yeah, we're all
in. Or we're not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you and I have both. I know that we both said, look, I'd really like to do something, but something else has my time commitment, and I'm not going to do that unless I can do it all the way.
Yeah.
So if somebody could rearrange on the calendar, then we'd be in. But if not, I can't commit to that because I can't give it the proper effort.
There is that. And that's part of my concern also is that, and the other thing is, a lot of people who make reservations for these kind of training sessions, they put them on their calendar 8 months out, okay? There's no way I'm going to know what class I'm going to teach 8, 10, 12 months in the future. And really, you talked about teaching basic classes. I think you would agree with me that the basic classes, there's a great amount of satisfaction in that. Because we know we're helping people at a level where they really, really need it.
Undoubtedly, yeah.
But then it's much more engaging and invigorating for guys like you and I to teach advanced stuff. I mean, I probably never had as much fun, if you're talking about working, never probably had as much fun as when I instructed Handgun Combat Master. That was because the quality of the people you're working with.
And yeah, I totally relate to that. As a matter of fact, at one point in time, I got a call from the main guy and asked if I would start taking over the master's course. And I'd only ever shot in that thing for like a 2-day period one time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd shot the test outside of it a couple times. And I was asked, look, I want you to revamp the class and rewrite the curriculum because it's not very good right now. It's really gone astray. And it took a few months to do that.
I'll
it took
it.
About 8 months to
There's
do that.
There's a lot involved in that program.
There is. And I got to tell you, the enjoyment and the satisfaction was great. And as much as I have been considered a handgunner in mm-hmm. my career, I really prefer the long guns. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite weapon systems is a shotgun. I love the defensive shotgun.
Really?
I really do. A lot of people put it in a very narrow focus, and it's got just so many purposes here. It does. But the purposes that it does, it excels at so far and beyond what most people understand.
Mm-hmm.
For a human being to get shot with a full load of buckshot,
9.38 caliber projectiles.
Yeah, it's basically like getting shot by 9.32 ACP Magnums simultaneously. That's a lot of firepower.
Yeah.
And that's it's literally far more than the average human body would ever need. But to actually...
You know what? I think a 22 is more than the average human body really needs.
Well, I'll give you to a point. But yeah, but just you know, some of the long gun stuff, like this group that I work with now, we do mainly long gun stuff.
Oh, all right.
We do some handgun stuff, but mainly it's long gun stuff. And a great group of professionals. They get together. They get a hold of me usually a couple, 2-3 weeks in advance. We set a schedule, go out and do stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And I do enjoy it quite a bit. It's always been fun to work together with you as well. So maybe we could put together some badassery.
You know what I'd be comfortable with? You're going to laugh because, like, how's this going to happen? If somebody wanted to come along and give us a gang of money to set up a really great school so that we were in charge of the school and didn't have to be out on the gravel 12 hours a day teaching. I mean, I love to teach, don't get me wrong, but to have the ability to oversee that operation where the quality teaching is going on and not actually be the hands-on teacher every single day, that's more appealing.
And we both actually had that experience at the same place we worked at. I mean, I was in charge of all the staff training for quite some time. And that was nice. There was a few points where I was the only one on staff qualified to teach any particular of 2 or 3 courses, and I always wanted to get somebody else up to pace, and luckily we did.
Yeah. All right, my friends, thank you very much for spending your time with us, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.